Oh, by the way, thank you for murdering my second name. Yeah, so my name is Devjani Bodapudi. Most people call me Dev, it's easy. So I've got this pamphlet called For the Daughters Carried Here on the Hips of Their Mothers. The story behind this pamphlet is, well, it's me documenting the lives of, thank you, my grandmother, my mother, and the experiences of myself as well. So I'm just gonna go ahead and I'll read you the first poem, which is quite long. So that would mean I'll need to read less later on, hopefully. It's called You Left Something Behind, based on a true story on real life events. Okay. One, you pack some of your clothes and your children's clothes in a large red bedsheet printed with pink and orange flowers. You fold in the corners and tie them together. Your husband has already taken what he needs. You must handle the rest alone. Two, you scramble around the house, confused and dazed, searching for things that might be useful, things that you could sell. You've heard copper is more valuable than gold. You rush to the kitchen, collect the pots and place them in the trunk. Your eyes fall on the tulsi and the small gods upon the altar. You must leave them behind. Three, your three small children are sleepy. They grizzle and sniff, but otherwise are quiet. You carry the youngest upon your hip while the other two hold hands on the end of your sari to form a chain. You instruct them to never let go. You pay the servant who assures you that he will meet you with your things at the bank of the crossing. He tells you not to worry. You can only thank him and give him the keys to lock up the house where you became a mother four times over. You know that you will not return. Five, you walk a short distance and come across a caravan of shadow people. They are all heading towards the bank of the crossing. The nighttime is safer for such things. Of course, it is raining, so there is no moon. No stars, no light. And as you join the caravan of shadows, your inadequate two-deer sandals that you bought at the bazaar slip and slide in the road that has become mud. You consider removing your sandals to remember this red-brown earth with the soles of your bare feet. Six, the children, as if sensing the need for patience, are still quiet, as stable and as good as gold. Even the youngest sleeps, mouth open and content, her head on your shoulder and arms wrapped around your neck. A shadow woman smiles and offers to hold her, and at first refuse to let go, but soon you agree, because although the girl is light, she has become heavy, and your arms long to carry nothing. You are grateful as you hand her to the shadow woman. Eventually, you reach the bank. Your eyes search the dark for the servant who promised to bring your things, but there are too many shadows and you cannot see him anywhere. Shadows are already in the water. Shadows keep arriving. Shadows are pushing you forward. You must cross now. Eight. The shadow woman who is holding your youngest is still smiling and you wonder how. You must cross now, she says. But my things, you say. There is no time. There are only things. And in the back of your mind, you wonder if you have forgotten something important, but they are only things. Nine. You are holding one child. The smiling shadow woman is holding the other, and out of nowhere is a shadow man who offers to carry the third across the river. The water is chest deep. You are already drenched from the rain. You step into the water and surrender. Ten. It is cold. Like knives in the dark, and every step you make, you inhale sharply. You long to call out, but no one is making a sound except for the whispers of prayers, the absent gods that drown with the swish, swish of the shadow bodies moving through the blackened water. 11. And finally you arrive on the bank of the crossing of the other side. The shadow couple hand back your children and rest them on the bank of the crossing of the other side. They walk away through the darkness and you never thought to ask them their names. 12. You stand in the rain, twice soaked. You remember what it was that you forgot. Under your pillow, where you reach every night, where it is cool to the touch, is the gold of the bangle of your first child, the one who died. Thank you. Thanks. So a little note on the pamphlet. It is split up into three sections. The first section are all memories and experiences that I have learnt about my grandmother, or she's shared with me. We actually took the time to interview her because we were absolutely, you know, convinced that she had things to tell us, and she wasn't saying anything, because I think that generation have a lot that they've kept hidden and they've decided to bury and not really talk about. But it's all had an effect on everyone, so we needed to know. We needed to know where we came from and what she'd been through. So this is a poem about when she arrived in this country. And if you look at the pamphlet, there's a little bit of an Easter egg in there. I'm not going to tell you what it is. It's called You Are Home. You move through the kitchen, an exhalation, no longer seeing the orange and beige you adopted. You miss the smell of red earth, but understand tea here. The kettle, a squat matriarch upon the stove. And clinks of chipped china as you arrange new old paraphernalia of a ritual, old new, ending with sunsets so early they welcome ghosts, ever eager, outlined in snow. You shiver at the reflection in the window. How different to the endings you were accustomed to, only to learn that customs like memories of a cherished garden must grow anew many times a lifetime. How many times must you endure then the upheaval of transplantation and loss? Thank you. Okay, so I'm going to move on to the second section. The second section would probably be about my mother's experiences. Again, my mother's very tight-lipped about what she went through. And it only came about through conversations we had when we were, you know, sitting side by side or working side by side. She's in the kitchen, I'm helping her, and, you know, suddenly these stories come out. It's never a direct kind of conversation. So this one is called A Fear of Snakes and Birds. You have a fear of snakes. But why? Your daughter asks. You can't remember, but you were told that you were bitten once in the place you came from long ago. You tell her this as you stir in the sugar to the syrup to make her father's favourite sweet that you cannot eat. But there are no snakes here, she reminds you, and it's true. There is nothing here to fear but birds, because birds can talk and cause commotion. They can fill your head with dreams of independence and a life outside these walls, and you have a fear of birds because they might carry you away. But no one ever leaves because they're only a little unhappy. And what would you do anyway? You ask the birds. So now you have a fear of snakes, and letting your bare feet touch the glass-bound earth, and a fear of birds because you are afraid to touch the sky. Thank you. I'm going to read you another poem from that section. It's fun. It's titled Paper Boats, like the children's novel, but it's got nothing to do with that. Not children's novel, the children's picture book. It's about, and I'm just going to read it and you can make up your mind what it's about. Paper Boats. Your mother sits on her favourite chair by the bay window and watches the world go by. You have a million things to do and you're always in pain. You dust, vacuum, prepare her tea to listen to her complain about how it's all wrong anyway, about how you always fail to see, but you take a minute to ask, because that is how it is and always will be. And so you take that minute to ask what she watches with such intent, and she tells you she notices how the birds balance on an unsteady branch that quivers in the December wind. She sees how Brian goes by now all alone, and that she hasn't seen his wife in some days. And of course, she sees the little boy from the cross the road who refuses to hold his mother's hand, and how the number 64 doesn't stop at our stop anymore. She doesn't tell you how she looks farther back to when paper boats carried her grief, how they teetered with the voices of her every lost child, how the warmth of their hands and hers as she pulled them along to force them to bathe or eat when they would rather have played. Thank you. I'm going to move on to the final section. I'm going to read you, every section comes with a little bit of a preamble about what the section is going to be about. So I'd like to think of these as little poems as well, so I'll read you that. And I suppose this one was the hardest to write, this section, because it's more about what I've experienced, what I've gone through, and it's a little bit hard to step away from that on the page and then confront what you're actually feeling. So this is called For the Granddaughters. For the Granddaughters. You have come to know these lands, these fields, these streets, these trees, these birds, like the very lines on your light brown palm. You wake to the same yellow sun and cry to the same blue songs on the radio, just like your Gora friends. You sometimes forget you aren't like them. And when they remind you, you are lost all over again. So I'm going to read the final poem in that section. There is a more political poem, but because, I might save that for tomorrow, I don't know. So I'm going to read the final poem in this section. It's called Coconut Butterfly. Now, a coconut butterfly doesn't exist. I made it up just before you guys try Googling it. And so it's not real. Okay, coconut butterfly. Coconut butterfly, or Cocoa aspirans, often appear dull brown or black when in flight. However, they possess the unique ability to change colour when they come into contact with other butterflies of a lighter shade, belonging to a different species. Coconut butterflies often mimic the behaviour of these other butterfly species so effectively that they have been known to be accepted into their social groups without suspicion. Graham and Knott et al., 1967, have also noted instances where the coconut butterfly has successfully mated with butterflies out of their species, something that is not at all common in the insect world. They are careful not to stand out from their surroundings for fear of discovery, possibly a latent evolutionary instinct as noted in the celebrated peppered moth. This is because it has been known for other butterflies to viciously attack and cast out any members outside of the species perceived to be a threat. You, perfect prefect in your old private school where they discuss skiing over the break. You only eat with a knife and fork on porcelain plates, shunning the stainless steel which could never carry meals containing such little spice. Your palate is delicate. You prefer cheesy pasta or sausages and mash to the pungent dishes you are sometimes served by your mother, whose tongue, careless and demanding, you choose to be illiterate in. You abhor Bollywood, trite and contrived. You prefer Austin, a period drama where the lady is cotton white like you on the inside. But on the inside hides a shy brown girl, still uncertain about her place in the world, longing to be a Priyanka in a world where Elizabeths and Edwards are in control and pastel shaded. You are well versed in great works you aspire to, but you wish you could relate to the books your father reads and the songs of revolution he sings, and you savour your mother's food made with a sauté of a certain spice blend, offered in perfect hillocks and mounds only to be taken with your deft fingers, and you worry, were you ever really good enough to pass for what they wanted? Thank you. So I've got, I think I've got a couple more minutes. So this new collection that I'm writing, I'm going to try out a couple of poems on you, if that's okay. So I want you to imagine that, so, you know, I love the fact that Ireland is steeped in mythology and folklore, and it's something that I'm very interested in as well. So I've been doing my own research. I've been looking back at Indian mythology and Indic mythic traditions, and I've kind of done a bit of a mix and match. I've kind of used a Gorgon who's got wings, but also I'm using the Indian pantheon of gods like Brahma and Agni and Jatayu. So these are all like, you know, they're all there in Indian sort of Sanskrit literature. And so I want you to imagine a mother who's a virgin, who's given birth to an abomination. And so I'm gonna, but before, you know, so basically what I've done is I've split up the book again into sections. So the first section is just about the beginning of it all, before the birth. I slept for most of the day, spilling out over months until little remained contained except the bulging, threading theories in the community sports field, chalky mornings fizzed. People talked in vinegar tones on and around the school run, walking their dogs with time to conjecture and evaluate the state of me. When I wasn't sleeping, I'd fixate on the outside, marked by arrow lines, inside concrete rotations mimicked a hole. The outside sauntered in and through unsealed gaps between fraying nets like silverfish. Thank you. Okay, so I don't know. Okay, so one more poem. And I think I'll read you the one I'm most proud of, actually, the final one. I interpret this as when you give birth to a child, or when you have a child, they become you, you become them. There is very little left of yourself, which is sad but true. So this is called Response. In the crook of her elbow between each lash, dilating and contracting her pupils in response to my presence, blowing and puckering to gather her in to a darkening where there are no sharps, I enveloping her like putty, she molds me at the edge she needs until there is no space for light, until I'm upturned and hollowed out, becoming the outline of her. Thank you. Sorry, I just want to say one more thing. We arrived here Monday morning, this morning, 10 o'clock, still Monday. I don't know. But anyway, we arrived here and it's just been a bit of a whirlwind, but you guys have been so hospitable and so kind and so generous. And thank you, Paul. And thank you, Brendan, for showing us around. It's been absolutely amazing. Thank you.